I got a nice text from Dave Lawn, former pitching coach at USC, and I think down in Arizona. So glad to hear from Dave. He's enjoying the show. He said, well, that Lincecum was the best college pitcher he's ever seen. So that's high praise from Dave Lawn. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Good. Hey, Benji Molina, this is a whole story. Does this ring a bell for you guys? With Benji Molina hits the ball, looks like it's out. They call it not out. Burris goes in to run for him. Replay happens, and now it's a home run, and Burris is in the game. Do you remember all this?
Yeah, I sure do. I mean, it's a hard one. It's a hard one to follow. I mean, I didn't know what the heck the rule was on that, but once you put him in the game, he had to circle the bases. So I don't know if we've ever seen that since. Of course, with replay and everything, I don't know how it's changed it. We're more apt to wait on these things to make sure the play is finished. But yeah, I do remember that moment.
Bill, anything like that ever come up with you?
No, I tell you, I remember it also. It was so unusual, and as Woe said, you know, the ball was hit. Everybody thought it was foul. Nobody even thought it was even close. And sure enough, the round of the bases, I mean, Bird comes in. It was hilarious. And, you know, Benji was nodding his head. He had no clue what the hell was going on in the dugout. And sure enough, he ends up getting a home run out of the deal. So it was pretty good for him.
You know, we haven't touched much on Benji Molina, Woe, and Bill. A very important part of the building of the Giants, and Lincecum, look, he loved pitching to him. Now, where do you find, you know, Benji Molina sort of in the hierarchy of Giants catchers, Woe? You've been there a long time. Where do you put Benji?
Well, you know, he spent 3 years with us, and, you know, he got us started to the 2010 World Series, and, of course, we traded him to Texas, you know, when Buster came up, which was a good move for us and a good move for Benji because he ended up with two playoff shares in the World Series. But he was a pro's pro. I really enjoyed my time with Benji Molina. I mean, look, he drove in 80, 95, and 80 runs in the 3 years with us. I mean, those are big RBI totals for a catcher. And he handled the staff. Everybody had respect for him. He was an outstanding receiver. Not as good a thrower as his other two brothers, but certainly no slouch. But I remember one thing that I took from him in my career when he came over, and we were talking about pitching to the best hitters in the game. You know, Bill, guys, you navigate through the lineup and you say, hey, we don't want Goldschmidt to beat us here, or whoever it is. Mm-hmm. And what he liked to do was tell the pitchers, look, you know, we're just not going to keep the ball down and away. But when we pitch to these guys, we're going to add another foot to the plate, down, up, outside, and inside. And I want you to stay between the plate and that foot and throw to those quadrants. So we're going to expand the zone in that manner, which, you know, made a lot of sense. So you really make sure that the pitcher doesn't, you know, throw one down the middle when you're trying to not let the guy beat you. And I thought he was a pro's pro.
You know, Ron, the biggest thing that you just said there that I remember so much of him was the communication skills he had with his pitchers. He used to go out there and chirp at them, and he used to take the ball back and fire it back at you. And those are tendencies that old catchers used to do when you miss location. They didn't holler at you. They just picked the ball up and they fired at you. And you're like, why the hell did you throw the ball back so fast? And sure enough, they'd point, I want it here. I don't want it over here. And that's how Benji was. Benji was pretty electric behind the plate as a defender, and that's what I thought he was better at. Of course, the triple, I think it might have been in Fenway where he hit it. I might be wrong there. When he hit the triple, that was hilarious. Rounded the bases, he didn't have the stellar speed, but I always thought he had that late hack where he could go to right field or right center well, and I thought he was very good for the Giants for the 3 years he played there. And he took the trade, you know, as a pro, and tipped his hat to Buster Posey as a rookie, and he said he's ready. And sure enough, we saw him in Texas, which was pretty cool. I thought that was a cool scene with the Giants in Texas in that World Series.
Well, what about the brothers, the three of them? You know, you've been around the game a long time. You can think of brother combinations, a couple of them, but three of them mm-hmm. at that level, and all catchers. How about that?
It's unbelievable. You know, I think Benji wrote a book about his dad, who was a big influence in growing up, and they have three major league catchers, and all of them have had outstanding careers. And I agree with Bill. I mean, Benji, he was a throwback. He took charge. You know, the best catchers in the game first worry about their catching and handling the pitching staff over their hitting. Mm-hmm. And Benji was still able to make himself into a pretty good RBI guy over the course of his career. But two things stand out, if I could, real quick, on Benji. One, to Bill's point, you know, him hitting a triple, but, you know, I've never seen a guy hit a ground ball over the second base bag, and it goes all the way to the wall in left field, hits the wall, and it's only a single. And that happened to Benji, the poor guy, in San Francisco. And then, Marty, you mentioned Manny Burris, and I think it was 08 or 09, Flan had to go to a graduation for his daughter. So, you know, Boach called me in and said, hey, I want you to coach third for this game when Flan's gone. So I hadn't coached third in 9 years. I'm all excited to coach third base. Well, I go out in the game. First inning goes, no problem. Then I'm really excited to be back on the field doing this, you know, breaking up bench coaching and get to compete and be with the guys. So the second inning, Benji Molina is up. We have two outs. He's hitting cleanup for us. And Manny Burris gets the third. I don't know if he hit a double and the gap moved over. And the first pitch to Benji, Manny Burris breaks down the line like he's going to steal home or try to balk the pitcher. And I said, Manny, I said, stay right here. Let Benji hit. I said, don't distract him. Very next pitch, Manny Burris takes off. I don't know if you guys remember this. And he tries to steal home with two outs. Well, the pitch comes in. He's out. And then I get a text from Flan, because the broadcasters go, what is going on? Tim Flannery sends Manny Burris home to steal home with two outs. And Flan's livid. He goes, I'm getting blamed and I'm not there. I'm really upset. Ruined my whole day. I mean, I was so mad that he did that right in front of me, and I had to go back out there and coach third for seven more innings. But I'll never forget that with Manny Burris.
What about Manny Burris as a player, Will? Yeah, what about him?
Well, he was a high pick. I think he was a number one pick for us. You know, he was had a lot of talent. A lot of tools, you know, he could run, didn't hit for power, but slap the ball around. He had the skills, but, you know, he hung on. I just saw him this spring. I think he was with the Dodgers. He really didn't establish himself as a major leaguer, being a number one pick the way you would expect. But you know what? He hung in there. He persevered. He stayed in the game an awful long time, but he just never really took the game to the next level for him.
Mm. Yeah, the one thing, as you said, I thought his hitting was not big league level, no doubt. He had gotten a lot of slumps, maybe a 220 hitter. Defense-wise, I thought he went to his left really well. Going up the middle, I thought he had problems with that. Good speed, good quick feet, decent arm, but I just didn't think at the major league level, I thought one of his weaknesses was definitely his hitting, and it showed because he bounced around so much after that.
Mm. You know,
you're right, Bill.
Talking about Molina made me think of, you know, how smart you have to be to play baseball. You do. To be an outstanding player, you got to be so smart. And I was wondering, with you guys competing with the manager in the other dugout or a player in the other dugout, and I remember when I first started this with Art Howe and Maka, they loved competing against Mike Socha. They just, because in those days the Angels went first to third, they stole base. It was a National League team, and well, you saw them, of course, in the World Series, and Art and Maka loved going against Socha. Was there someone like that for you guys? And Bill, you can start that one.
Well, you know, you got to go right against the Dodgers with Tommy Lasorda and the crew of players over there, from Garvey and Say and Russell and Steve Sachs from Sacramento. But the team that I really like to compete with, because I grew up in Ohio, was the Pirates of all teams, with Chuck Tanner. And what was a Pirate? And Chuck Tanner just was that stellar kind of manager. And he had a great, great lineup in the early 80s with the Pirates. And, of course, he won the World Series in 78. But those are the two top teams that I just, you know, got to the next level and wanted to compete a little harder.
Yeah, Bill, I hear you. You know, Marty, you know, thinking about people that you you managed against, whether you're coaching and they're managing. You know, we talked a little bit about the Atlanta Braves and Bobby Cox, and the other guy was Tony La Russa. And, you know, Tony was always inside your head. You know, he was always paying attention to the game. He never took his eye off the field. He was very, very astute. And, you know, I remember a couple of years there in St. Louis, you know, the big thing for him is his squeezes. He was leading the league in suicide squeeze, not the safety squeeze that we do now, but the suicide squeeze. But, you know, Tony wasn't afraid to do things. He kind of made his mark, a little bit like Joe Maddon. You know, Joe Maddon has taken it to a new level with the things that he tries, whether it's the bunt plays on defense or some of the crazy stuff that he has done in the game to make a name for himself. And, you know, Tony was like that. You had to be on your game against him and Bobby Cox, and both of them were aggressive. And I thought what made him really good was they were proactive. You know, these two guys were proactive. They weren't reactive. They didn't wait for the damage to be done, you know, to take a pitcher out or to make a move. Well, they used their gut. They used their baseball savvy, and they made the moves before things got out of hand. And I really respected those two guys as managers.
What about Lasorda? Well,
Tommy, you know, I wasn't around him all that much. I was just breaking into the league, I think, the first couple of years. I can't remember his last year, Bill. I don't know if you remember his last year, but my first year was 98. And, you know, I didn't really coach against Lasorda. What was his last year? Do we know?
Early 90s, I think it was. But, you know, he was the type of guy that would scream stuff from the dugout. He would just holler. He'd just holler stuff out. And you were like, where is this coming from? Because he used to always say, chuck the ball with me, because he thought I was throwing a spitter. And it was just a two-seamer. It had a little saliva on it, but it wasn't a spitter. It just moved a little bit more. But at the same time, he was the guy that just screamed all the time. It was just, you know, the passion in Tommy Lasorda and the things that he did to fire up the troops. And that's what good managers did.
Well, what about Socha, what I said about Socha? Now, in 2002, going against the Angels, I mean, Sean Figgins, these guys, they ran like crazy, didn't they, the first to third thing?
Yeah, well, that was his mark. I mean, I managed against Socha in the Fall League in the winter of 97. We were both in the Fall League, and then he went up to be the Major League manager with the Angels, and I went to the coach third for Dusty Baker here in San Francisco that next season. So I was familiar with him, and again, he was aggressive. He was assertive. He loved to hit and run, 1-0. Remember, he had guys, I think Paul LaDuca played for him at one point, but 1-0 count. He was going to hit and run. He was going to take it to you, and a lot of teams tried to mimic what Socha did with the Angels, and his big thing, and he's right, it creates a lot of runs, is going first to third. And you talk about that 2002 team, you know, they had Garrett Anderson, they had Tim Salmon, they had Erstad, they had some guys that could hit the ball out of the park, but which made them so tough, they had the little guys too, you know, Ecksteins. They would hit and run, and they would steal bases, and you had to be on your toes. They would take it to you, and I think they had one of the best offenses in baseball that year in 2002. I mean, they scored a ton of runs.
Very good.
Hey, Ron, as a manager, when you manage, was there any things that you did as a manager to disrupt the other pitcher or the other team as a manager? Did you do anything to fire up the troops that you needed to do?
Well, I had my moments. You know, I never had the opportunity to manage in the big leagues. I'll tell you, one year in Double A, Rick Helling. Remember Rick Helling? Pitched
sure,
in the big
sure.
leagues a little
Stanford.
Bit. He was a yeah. top, yeah. Not a bad pitcher at all. He threw in the mid 90s. He was pitching against us in Shreveport, and through five innings, he had a no hitter going. And I remember when we went out to the umpire, you can see his little white shirt coming out from underneath, just a little bit under his sleeves. And I went out and made the umpire, you know, pointed it out. And of course, the umpire said, "Hey, you got to take the shirt off." Well, he was so mad because he knew you that I was doing that just to get under his skin. And then mm-hmm. he came back out the next inning, and he was all flustered and so mad. We scored three runs off him, and ended up the game 3-1. So that's one that worked out, and those things happen. Those the gamesmanship of the game, and That used to happen. It's all gone from the game today, which I really miss. I think that's an entertaining part of it, and it's where you're trying to get an edge, and, of course, it's not in the game today.
Yeah, what about the color of a glove or the strings on a glove? Yeah. You guys probably complained about that.
Oh, Bill, you probably used that stuff to your advantage, didn't you?
Well, as a pitcher, you tried to do everything you could. I mean, there's no doubt, you know, Vita used to put stickum on his glove, you know, from the pine top. And he got away with it for so many years throwing a curveball. That's how he got the grip of the curveball. I mean, we could go to so many different things from Jim Barr to Gaylord Perry. There was so many different things pitchers did with your glove or behind your neck or put a little dab here to make the ball move a little bit. I mean, pitchers, that's what we did in the back end. You created things to try to create a different pitch just to get the edge on the hitter. That's what we did. That's how we played baseball back in the day. And hitters did the same thing from cork bats to all different other things that they used to do, too. And we talked about George Brett with the pine char. How high did he put it up there? So it was a good gamesmanship, though. You know, you protected your teammates, and the teammates fought for you harder. And those are all things, as a manager, like you said, those are little things managers need to do. Turn that key a little bit. Get fired up. We always talk about Earl Weaver and Billy Martin. That's what those guys did, and teams followed that. Teams got fired up when they saw that.
Have we lost it, Woe? Is that still part of the game?
Yeah, no, it's not part of the game today. It's just, you know, I don't know if it's the money and the media and, you know, so many people, you know, talking about incidents. But to me, it appears that, you know, people, I don't know if they consider it petty now or they don't want to be that guy that causes a stir. I mean, how many pitchers have pine tar and rosin all over them? And how many times you see a guy with a chain on or something like that? And nothing's done about it. And the umpires don't enforce it either. I mean, the umpires aren't going to say anything unless you, as a manager, goes up and say something to them. And I, you know, I can't remember the last time I really seen a manager, you know, call out something on a pitcher or try to do anything in this manner. It just doesn't happen.
Lasorda's last year was 96, managing the Dodgers. I just looked up. Hey, well, you said 98 was your first with Dusty. How did you get the call up? What happened?
Well, I managed in the fall league, and I remember it was the fall league was over, and Dusty called me, and he says, you're going to coach third base for me. And, you know, the thing I remember about it, I don't remember a conversation there, but I remember him taking the time, and we went out and had lunch. We were driving around, and he was talking baseball and things that he expected. And, you know, I was, I was in my early 30s, I guess, 32 or 33 at the time. And I was just so excited to finally get back to the big leagues. And I was happy for Lori, you know, my wife. Shoot, she had to go through the minor leagues twice, once when I was a player and then when I was a coach, and 3 years in Shreveport. That'll get to you. So I was so happy to be home here in the Bay Area and be working from the major league club after spending 8 years in the minor leagues.
Hey, Ron, I got a message here from a friend of mine in Arizona listening to the show. He texted me and he said, is it possible you could ask Ron this question? And I said, sure, I'll ask him. The question was, during the spring training games, one of the last few games was televised and Kershaw was pitching. And I guess coming off the mound, you had said something going by him and he got all flared up. Could you tell us a little bit what happened in that situation?
Okay, well, I just wasn't, look, I wasn't trying to cause a stir, that's for sure. That's why, you know, I just wanted to let Clayton know that I didn't appreciate him hitting our guy on purpose in a spring training game. And that was the end of it. And I just wanted to let him know that and keep moving. But, you know, he obviously it struck a nerve with him because he wanted a piece of me. And I don't know if he heard me clearly or not, but he wanted a piece of me. And it's just spring training, but I got my point across.
I love it. It was great. Great moment. Great baseball moment. All right, we'll take one more break. And when we come back, guys, Alex Pavlovich wrote a really interesting column this week, sort of the worst trades of San Francisco Giants history. So we could look at some of the best trades and some of the worst. And Bill, of course, you were there for a lot of things in the 80s, Jack Clark, one of them. And, Brian Sabian should get so much credit for the players he brought in. Any clunkers?
Yep.
And I could think of one, maybe Shea something. I can't remember his last name, but no, I'm only
Hildebrand?
Kidding. Yeah, thank you. I was only kidding. But let's take a break, come back, and talk about some of those moves right after this.
Talking baseball with Marty Lurie on KNBR 104.5 and 680, the sports leader.